Well, thank you all. You all can take a seat, and our kids are dismissed to their special time at the kids' table with kids' worship. They can head out in the back. I know that this is the cozy snow day worship. I guess it's ice day here, but thank you, Ben and Jen, for leading us and for all the folks that got here early to get shovels out and salt walkways so that nobody would fall and everybody would be safe here. I hope that all of you are doing well here in person. Good morning, church. Good morning, good morning. Good morning to you guys online. You can type in the chat box if you're on Facebook or wherever. Just say good morning to everybody. We love that you're able to still worship with us. By the way, I'm Pastor Chris. If this is your first time with us or first time in a long time, or if you're one of our old timers, especially welcome today. Just so delighted to be here, especially on this Super Bowl Sunday. And I do have to make a note. So I was asked, is there going to be lots of Eagles references in the sermon today? The answer is no. But I will say that in the Bible, Eagles are referenced quite a few times, and it's always in the positive light. I don't see a single reference for Chiefs. So anyway, we'll just go. Fly, Eagles, fly. We'll see what happens with that. And also, I've watched a couple of videos this week of these different animals. They do like these predictions, right? They had like a hedgehog, and they had like a guinea pig, and they had like a dog. Like, which team are they going to choose? Hands down, they all chose the green thing, whatever it was. Was it like, you know, it's like a green pepper for the guinea pig. He ate the green pepper instead of the red one and all that stuff. So we'll see tonight. So anyway, just saying. Question for today. Charlene, if you want to throw the question up on the screen as we start our message today. Question of the day. Have you ever had someone try to explain why something bad has happened or given unsolicited advice on what to do about it? Raise of hands, show of hands. Has that ever happened to you? Have you somebody given, explain why something bad's happened, or they've just given you unsolicited, you didn't ask for it, right? They just gave you unsolicited advice. This is what you should do. So interesting question, and this brought up a memory of mine when many of you know I'm a runner. And one of the worst things when you're an athlete is an injury. It sidelines you for sometimes days, weeks, months, sometimes even years. And there was a time in as I was running, I injured my hamstring very easily. Easy thing to do. Lots of runners that happens to. And I was very, very angry about it. I was going to physical therapy for it. You know, those of you who have been physical therapy for like weeks on end, you get me, you hear me. And I wanted to just run, but I couldn't. And I was so frustrated. Like, that was like my thing. I was missing out on races. It hurt. You know, I had to do all those like little exercises with the bands and all that kind of thing. And someone came up to me and said to me, and this was a close friend, and I still love her, by the way. She came up to me and said, "Well, at least it's just running and it's not cancer." And I have to say, that's true, right? She communicated something that was completely true. She intended well, but her words were not helpful. Not helpful at all. You know, once again, true, but not necessarily good. And it's interesting that, like, since that time, as a pastor, you can imagine, I've sat and I've talked with so many people who've experienced all kinds of pain and suffering and disappointment in life and loss, especially, and that means that over the years, I've also had a lot of theological explanations that people try to give for why things have happened, or that unsolicited advice to be added to the mix. And we in our previous series, before we started the book of Job, we were talking about the different sayings that we have, Christian sayings that we talk about, and you can go back to that series about "I Never Said That" is what it's called by Jesus. And we throw around those things a lot. You know, things we say even in addition to that, like, you know, somebody loses a job, and then it's very easy to say, God closed the door, but he opened a what? Window, right? He opened the window. A person cheats on you, and you're told that what doesn't kill you does what? makes you stronger. You know, Kelly Clarkson sings about that too in his really mad way. But the chances are that most of us have been recipients and givers of that kind of unsolicited advice, those explanations. And we do this even to ourselves, right? Like we try to, like we talk to ourselves in our heads about these things, and we try to give those explanations. And I think that as human beings, we want to believe that there always is these explanations, especially for things that hurt or painful or disappointing or just times even in our world that just like don't seem to make any sense to us. And we want to justify ourselves. But even as we do, we rarely go back though and admit and reflect that maybe we were wrong. So this sermon today has kind of two layers, and you may be in one layer or a different layer. The first layer is that we're going to continue this sermon series talking about the book of Job and studying the book of Job. And on one layer, we're going to talk about suffering. Suffering, the causes of it, the explanations for it, the biblical explanations. But then on another level, we're going to talk about the how. The how, right? Because like just as I shared in my little like story, the how we communicate things often determines the impact of those things. The how we go about it. What is our spirit when we talk about those explanations for suffering? So bear with me that in this book of Job, by the way, we just started last week. We're unpacking these scriptures. I encourage you to read the book of Job. We have like a study guide that's out there. It's also online as well. And if you've never read the Bible before, that's totally okay. Just read the book of Job with us over these next 5 weeks. Read a little bit each day. We kind of have some questions that go along with that. And the gist of the story of Job is that it's really the story of a guy who did everything right, but had everything go wrong. Ever felt like that? Like everything right. He did everything right. But he had all these things, so many things go wrong. And so the book overall, it's one of the oldest, some scholars believe it is the oldest book in the Bible that was written. But that it explores some really age-old human questions of why. Why? Where is God? What is God doing? And last week we looked at chapters 1 and 2. Which are called the prologue. This is kind of the structure of the book of Job. The prologue, it kind of sets the earthly and heavenly stages for the story of what happens to this very, very good man who has all these bad things happen. And we talked about how there's this righteous man named Job, and he lives in the land of Uz, and we don't really know where Uz is, and Job is kind of a weird name in that. And he's described as this just generally good guy, and he's blessed. He has all the things, everything you could ever imagine. His family is amazing. It's just all really good. But then the scene shifts, and we're taken to like a heavenly realm where God, believe it or not, is ready to have a meeting. He's having a meeting. Those of you who don't like meetings, well, there's a meeting that God is having, and he's having with his angels, his divine beings, we're told. And they're all sitting around. The angels are ones that follow the Lord. They follow him and what he wants to do and his actions and what his commands are around the world. And they're ready to have this meeting, and guess who shows up uninvited? The adversary named Hasatan, the Satan, because he's doing his own thing. He's not following the orders of God. And so he just wanders in, just uninvited to this meeting. And God's like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? Like, why are you here? Where have you been up to? And Hasatan's like, well, I've just been kind of going to and fro in the earth. And then the conversation shifts talking about this righteous man named Job. And God's just very proud of this man and all the things that he's done. And then the adversary, the Hasatan, Satan, he says, well, I think he's just doing that, God, because you blessed him with so many things. You gave him everything he wanted. And he just loves you because he got everything. It's like the vending machine, right? The vending machine model of God. And then God's like, I don't think so. So what happens is God allows the adversary to go to Job and to begin to take things away from Job. One by one by one, these tragedies happen, all these places, because God is determined that this righteous man is not going to turn his back on God just because of the blessings. And that's kind of the story that we're starting out with. That the adversary causes all this havoc and destruction in Job's life. But then we have Job, who has absolutely no idea what's going on in the heavenly realm. We have to remember that too. Is that we often have no idea what is playing out in the bigger picture of things that God is handling and God is involved in and the destruction that's taking place. And we ask ourselves the question, just like Job did, why do I love God? When things get hard in life, when I don't get what I want, do I turn towards? We use the imagery of a marriage. Do I turn towards in conflict or do I turn away? Do I turn towards and grow deeper, or do I turn away? But then suddenly, in chapter 3, we have another scene shift. And here, we're introduced to three guys that are going to become really, really important. And these are Job's three friends. His friends, right? Anybody watch the show, right? These are his buddies. These are the people, you know, they have all their things going wrong with them as well. And their names are Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. You're going to get a puppy. You got some good choices right here. But the thing is, none of those, interesting enough, none of those are Hebrew names. None of them. They're archaic. They're kind of foreign, far off names. And what follows in the chapters that follow are conversations between Job and his three friends. Conversations back and forth. These kind of, and they're all, by the way, written in lyric poetry in the Hebrew. So it's almost like you've ever read Shakespearean play, like that's what we're kind of seeing. We're seeing this kind of play out, these giant statements that these friends are making. And Job wants to explore this. He wants to explore some questions and the meaning behind what's been taking place. Because once again, he has no idea what God has been doing and what's happening with the adversary and all this kind of stuff. And his friends, his well-meaning friends, try to give him some answers. And so basically, the parallels here, right? The parallels is Job is kind of like us. It's us. Is the reader, and so the listener, and the three friends, they represent the prevailing wisdom or prevailing statements that were made in that day, and I think also in ours. The prevailing wisdom that people thought as to explain the why. But what we're going to see through these conversations is that those beliefs are challenged. Those beliefs, even though they may be right, they're actually wrong. They're challenged. And that's really the gist of the book of Job, is that God eventually steps in to correct what humans think and are supporting and believe to be happening. And so all the parties, though, including the friends and Job, what they are given is an opportunity for their faith to be challenged, but their faith also to grow. They're to grow. That God doesn't want our faith to remain as children, but he wants to grow and deepen us and shape us. And sometimes it's a little more complex and complicated than maybe where we started out than before we asked those questions. So today, we're going to look at the first conversation and the first question that Job raises, and that's the question of why do we suffer? Why do we suffer? Why is this happening? Why am I going through this? Ever asked that? The Bible doesn't actually give us just one way to understand suffering, though. The first friend who speaks here is the friend named Eliphaz, and he represents really the traditional answers. And imagine this, that he came to see Job, just as many of us do, and you know, somebody's going through grief and trial and suffering and loss and pain. He came and visited and sat with Job for 7 days. 7 days of silence. He was just present with Job. He just sat there, was there to support him and be with him. But then he breaks the silence and opens his mouth, and he says this in Job chapter 4. Then Eliphaz the Temanite replied, "If someone ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? But who can keep from speaking? Think how you have instructed many. How have you have strengthened feeble hands? Your words have supported those who stumbled. You've strengthened faltering knees, but now, Job, trouble comes to you and you are discouraged. It strikes you and you are dismayed. Should not your piety be your confidence and your blameless ways your hope? So the first reason for suffering that Eliphaz raises here is that suffering is a consequence of something you've done. Suffering is a consequence of something you've done. And that sometimes we suffer, and this is true, that sometimes we suffer because of things that we did, our choices, that we kind of deserve those consequences. It's not even necessarily like God intervening and doing something. There's built-in consequences to some of our behaviors. And Eliphaz says this in verse 7. He says, "Consider now, who being innocent has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? As I have observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. At the breath of God they perish. At the blast of his anger they are no more." So Eliphaz, clearly here, he feels justified concluding that those who clearly have not been protected by God are not being blessed. And that they're not being blessed and it's because they've simply not been serving God. He concludes that therefore, they're being disciplined. They're being disciplined. That it's deserved, that the suffering is deserved, that they've been kind of doing their own thing. You know, some of us relate that in a sense. You know, we throw around the word karma sometimes, and no, that's not a Christian thing. But I think that's what we're kind of getting to, that somebody, you know, you do something, you're going to eventually suffer the consequences for it and come back. And Eliphaz goes on and he spells out some of Job's sins later. You ever done that to somebody? I've never done it. Like, this is crazy stuff. He goes to Job and he says this. He says, "Is not your wickedness great? Are not your sins endless, Job? You demanded security from your relatives for no reason. You stripped people of their clothing, leaving them naked. You gave no water to the weary, and you withheld food from the hungry." He's making a laundry list here of all the things that he's suspecting that Job has done. See here, we do have to give him credit though, because Eliphaz is making an argument that the Bible does make in various places to take seriously the commands of God. I mean, the whole idea of the Old Testament law that's given by God is that when we break rules, we experience consequences for them. You know, it's just like in your household, like, you know, you break a rule as a child, you know, then there's a consequence for those behaviors. And some of us hear it and dismiss it, but I think we've all experienced it. You know, as little kids, think about that. As little children, I remember this one day. This is like one of my vivid, like, young memories, so I'm going to share this with you. I was in preschool. And I think I was like maybe 3 or 4 years old. And I had this like sweatshirt on, I remember. And anybody remember the days of Popples? They're like an 80s like character thing. They're like this creature with the fuzzy. Anyway, so I had a Popple t-shirt. It's just an animated thing. And I had this like Popple on the t-shirt or on the sweatshirt. And I was in preschool the one day and I have no idea what happened. But this one girl I didn't like. I didn't like her. So I had this brand new sweatshirt, and I went to all my other friends, all the other kids in the class, and I said, "Here, my fuzzy Popple sweatshirt, you can touch it. It's nice and fuzzy." And I had my friends do it, but I didn't like that girl. So when she came over, I'm like, "No, you can't touch my Popple sweatshirt." You know, I mean, this is like the day, this is the 80s, this is like the days before any appropriate touching things and all that stuff. I'm like, "You can touch, you're not allowed to touch," you know, that kind of thing. And I remember like the teacher coming up and like, "Kristen, why?" My name, real name is Kristen, by the way. Like, "Kristen, why won't you let her touch your Popple, but you're letting everybody else," you know? And I was like, "I don't like her. Why? I don't like her," you know, like that's what we say, right? And like, "I don't like her." So I got really angry, and I remember the teacher like, "You need to do what now? Go to the corner and take a time out." I had to go to the corner. This time I'm like, "I just didn't like her," you know, all that kind of stuff. And like, go to the corner, and I was just being mean for the sake of being mean. I mean, like, come on now. Like, sometimes we do that, right? I mean, even as adults, like, we're just mean for the sake of being mean. And I had to take some time out in the corner because I was just choosing to be mean to this kid. I mean, I could have just been nice and said, "No, I don't really want anybody touching my Popple sweat. Don't touch my Popple," right? But that whole thing, but that's the thing, like I had to suffer a consequence, and maybe you've done something, remember you have a memory like that as a child, you were punished for some kind of behavior that you did or didn't do, and that's the thing, like sometimes that happens, that sometimes suffering is a consequence of something we've done. I mean, if you play with your ice cream, you drop it, what happens? You lose it, you don't get another one. You know, if you choose to skip class, you're probably going to fail that class. You know, if you only eat chicken McNuggets, is your health going to be good or bad? Bad, right? I mean, if you cut corners in your job at work, you could get fired. We are often also a source of other suffering too. Ourselves, we cause other people to suffer. How we treat people can cause deep suffering. And anybody whose family, if you've wrestled with addictions, you know this, that addictions cause pain and hurt beyond the person who's affected. You know, it's just intoxicating driving kills innocent bystanders and innocent people. You know, and Jesus communicates this too, is that we have that cause and effect and consequences on one another. And that we're also responsible in some way to take care of one another. He shares multiple stories. There's a story of the rich man and Lazarus. This rich man that didn't treat this man Lazarus well. And they end up in very, very different places. He talks about the parable of the sheep and the goats for how different people treat the poor and the needy and the people that need food and are naked and he treats there's a consequence for that. Jesus talks a lot about that. But Eliphaz, going back to him, he tries to remind Job that suffering sometimes is due to decisions that we make, and we have to say that yes. That's true. It's true. But there's a danger here. There's a danger. And the danger is that as Job himself recognizes, his friends use this theology as a way to assure themselves that what happened to Job could never happen to them. They use it as a way of reassurance to say, well, what happened to Job? It couldn't ever happen to me because I didn't do those things. And we do much of the same thing, but Job pushes back. That Job says, yes, that may explain some of it some of the time, but Eliphaz, that's not all of it, and that's not my case, Eliphaz. So Eliphaz, he moves on to the second purpose. A second reason for suffering that he raises is that suffering corrects us, and this too is true. Suffering corrects us. You know, it's related to the first, but I think it's a little nuanced, that it may be that God is trying to keep you from danger. That the disappointment and the hurt, it can get us to move in a very different direction. And so he says this, starting in chapter 5, verse 6. So he says, for hardship does not spring from the soil, nor does trouble sprout from the ground. Yet man is born to trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. Verse 17, blessed is the one whom God corrects, so do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. Whoa, right? Like, it's kind of poetic here, but it's saying distress can be a warning sign. It could be a guardrail. Yeah, you see, you know, guardrails along the side of the road? You know, the idea is not to hit them, but if you do, they're going to prevent you from doing what? Going over the cliff. That it's a warning sign. It's to protect us. And I think that's what we mean when we say that phrase, God, you know, closed the door, but he opens a window, that maybe he's protecting us from something and that he's steering us in a different way. And suffering is not punishment, but it's motivated by love. It's the love of a parent who corrects a child. Those of you guys have served in a parenting capacity, you know this, that it echoes the tradition wisdom of the Bible from even the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 3 says, my son, don't despise the Lord's discipline. Don't resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves. As a father, the son he delights in. You know, parents and grandparents, you can connect with this. You know, anybody, if you've ever taken care of a child, you want to protect that child. Because they often don't know better, you know. But yet, what do the kids say, right? The kids call you unfair. That's unfair, right? I want to eat candy before bed, but you know a lot better than they do, right? Because you know they're going to be up half the night, or somebody's going to get an upset stomach and they're going to be throwing up and doing all that kind of stuff. You see something that they cannot see. And that's the thing. We, most of us, can remember a time, even growing up, that, you know, maybe you were mad at your parents for doing something. You had a curfew. You weren't allowed to go to that party. And what, you're like, you know, I'm not talking to you. I hate you. I hate all this stuff. But then maybe you look back later and you're like, you know what? I'm kind of glad that my parents were a little strict in that way. I'm glad that I didn't go there, because guess who showed up? The cops at that party. Guess who got arrested? All my friends, right? Like, you know, sometimes that down the road we see those things, and we see that we were only being guided and shaped and protected. You know, and often as humans, we only see that in retrospect. And we see it in other places. That you see, like, okay, hey, even as adults, I lost that job. But it actually served to steer me in a better place. That I lost that friend or that relationship. But you know what? I learned from it. I grew from it. And God used it to steer me somewhere else. And Eliphaz says, well, maybe it's this. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's this, Job, that God is doing something a little bit different here. And he's correcting you. He's correcting, steering you in a new direction. But Job says still, yeah, that's true. But I don't think that explains it, Eliphaz. So then Eliphaz goes on and offers a third and final reason, which is also scriptural. Once again, all three of these things you can find in scripture sources of suffering. But Eliphaz says that suffering strengthens us. Suffering serves to strengthen us. And so he continues his explanation that Job doesn't do anything wrong, but that maybe Job didn't do anything wrong, but God's wanting to make him better. He's trying to make him stronger. So Job chapter 5 picks up where Eliphaz says this: you will laugh at destruction and famine and need not fear the wild animals, for you will have a covenant with the stones of the field and the wild animals will be at peace with you. You'll know that your tent is secure. You'll take stock of your property and find nothing missing. You know that your children will be many and your descendants like the grass of the earth. You will come to the grave in full vigor, like sheaves gathered in season. See, he's describing this as the effects of this suffering, Job, that, like, you're not going to fear anything. It's going to, like, make you fearless. It's going to, you know, you're going to laugh at destruction of family. I've been there. I've done that, right? All these things that sometimes suffering builds us up. And the New Testament scriptures, they talk about it in this way. Paul even relates it this way. In Romans chapter 5, Paul says this: not only so, but we also glory in what? Our sufferings. We glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And again, I know I've experienced that. You know, I only see later the times that I've gone through something that I've been made stronger or maybe more resilient. You know, I've worked for bosses in different places and times in my life that it's helped me to grow the ability to work with all kinds of different people, even though that was maybe a very difficult time. You know, that the financial problems that we encounter, like, maybe they teach us and strengthen us to say, well, maybe I don't have to just only rely on things, but also be wise in my spending habits. You know, we tend to be a pain-avoidant culture. But avoiding is not always the best way. You know, and I see that in so many of you guys, that so many of you guys have powerful stories involving things like addiction or mental health challenges, loss and grief, illness. And all of that has produced a very powerful witness, and that you've impacted others. Your stories impact others, what your family has been through, what you've been through, what you've experienced. You've become stronger through it. And that's what Eliphaz says. Suffering is also used to strengthen us. That's true too. But here we come to the end of his speech. We come to the end of Eliphaz's section here at explaining Job's suffering. And I want to say two things that I think are really clear. Is that the first is that sometimes suffering can work in these ways. You know, sometimes it's a result of consequences of our behavior or choices. Sometimes suffering prevents us from taking further steps down a road. sometimes it builds our character and does something in us that, like, we even might look back and say, I wouldn't change for anything. But this book, the book of Job, it teaches us, though, that we need to be cautious at projecting things on God and being prideful that we are right. Instead, the book paints a picture, a complex picture of the world, where people whose hearts are basically right nevertheless speak many untruths. Yet the central point of the book's portrayal of Job and the wisdom of the friends is that his friends speak out of massive ignorance. And that's us. They're right, 100%. But God is about to do something and to share and to say no, but they're not at the same time, that they're certain, but they're wrong. And that Job will continue to point out that these explanations don't explain everything. And that's important. That's important for us as we examine ourselves. Like, you know, maybe you're going through a rough time to examine, like, hey, you know, is this a consequence maybe of something that I've done or a choice I've made, you know? Is God protecting me here? Is this something that is going to help strengthen me that, like, most people are going to go through, but it's going to produce something in me? Or is there something else? See, friends, we need to be careful about putting ourselves as the experts. We can be very, very certain about things and very, very wrong, just as Eliphaz was. See, one of the central points of this profound book of Job is to expose our shallowness and the danger of thinking that we know all the answers, especially as they pertain to someone else. It's just like when I was growing up and we had a pet bunny that lived in a cage in our house. And sometimes we would let this bunny run around the house. And those of you that have had like a pet rabbit, like, you know, they're very, very smart. They could be litter trained. They're very, very fun. So we let him like run around and then we would put him back in his cage at night and go to bed. And so I was probably like elementary school age. My brother's just 2 years older than me. And I remember this one night we, got ready. My family got ready for bed and go to our bedrooms. And all of a sudden I hear my brother calling out from another room, Dad, Dad. There's something in my room. And remember, like, my parents are like, go back to sleep. Like, there's nothing in your room. Like, you know, you're fine. There's no ghosts. There's no animal. Like, there's nothing, whatever. You know, he's like, no, there's something moving. There's something moving. So finally, like, he would not give up. So my parents are like, just, like, ignore it. Like, the vent is blowing some air. Like, you know, there's something moving in the side. Just, like, go to bed. Well, sure enough, my brother was absolutely right, even though my parents thought he was wrong. Because guess what was in the room? The rabbit. The rabbit, he's, like, chewing on some cord, right? And, like, the lamp goes out. No, I'm just kidding on that part. But anyway, yes, the rabbit was under the bed, like he had gotten out or we had forgotten to put him in his cage. And it was so easy for my parents to dismiss that, my brother, you're just imagining things. Like, you know, you watched that movie too late at night. We shouldn't have let you watch that, you know. But my brother was right. My brother was right. And sometimes we dismiss, don't we? We dismiss what others are going through or experiencing or feeling. I think even more so in these days, we're easy to just say, oh, well, that's not me, and I don't believe that, and that's it. We dismiss. But friends, you know, the antidote, even if we feel like we have the answer, the antidote is always humility, a posture of humility. You know, I wonder what would have been the response to Eliphaz had he had a little bit of humility in his approach and explanations to Job. See, when God shows up to reveal the truth of what is behind and what's going on in several speeches in the chapters 37 to 41 of the book of Job, God doesn't concede that what happened to Job has anything to do with what anything Eliphaz has said. You know, God actually angrily rebukes Job's friends for drawing conclusions and speaking erroneously about God. And so the friend's response is, especially Eliphaz, without an ounce of humility to say, I might not be right here. I might be wrong. I'm judging this from my stance and my place. The friend's responses say that suffering happens for these reasons, but I think that there's a fourth answer. And that is that suffering is complicated. Suffering is complicated. But what we do know is God defends us. Suffering is a very, very complicated thing. And even in the book of Job, they have no idea. There are things going on that they cannot see. There are things going on, believe it or not, in our world that we cannot see. There are things going on in your life that you cannot see. There are things going on in your position on any X number of issues that you cannot see. And I think that that's where the humility comes in, friends, is that there are things beyond our understanding. But we know that God is constantly working and shaping us, and there is our defender, and our world is complicated, and so are human beings. And that's why we do have to embrace the two things of God, the mystery and the grace. See, the mystery is that there is more going on than we can see. There's a heavenly realm, believe it or not. There are forces of evil in our lives and the world at work. And it's easy for us to assume that I have all the answers, I see everything, I've read it all, I know everything, especially in explanations regarding other people, and just like Eliphaz does, and what these people deserve. But like Eliphaz, sometimes we really have no clue. But then mystery and grace. Grace, knowing that sometimes friends are going to say the wrong thing. Sometimes you will too. So when was the last time that you were wrong? When was the last time that you admitted you were wrong? When was the last time that maybe you questioned something that maybe you previously thought or believed or whatever that might be? Because those are the places, friends, that have had the most fertile ground for growth, especially in our growth in faith. Because if your faith is the exact same as it was when you were 5 years old, there's something wrong. You're stunted. It should be grown and shaped through those questions, through the examination, to say maybe there are not these just lists of easy answers here. And that's my challenge to you today, is that, you know, one of these explanations of suffering, like it may be right, but it may be wrong. But when you are certain but wrong, choose to grow. Choose to grow. I don't think Eliphaz chose that. I think he chose to sit in what he thought he knew. And once again, it was to put Job in a place that he was not going to be because he didn't do any of those things. Eliphaz had a hard time letting go of the fact that God had something to teach him. And actually, Job had something to teach Eliphaz. And so I want to give you a challenge today. As your faith grows, as your interpretation of Scripture grows, as your understanding and relationship with God grows, I can assure you that there are going to be hurdles along the way. There are going to be times that the set answers, the flannel graph Jesus, the childish answers, they will not work anymore. There may be times that you will question beliefs about God and how He works. And you may be given answers that are simple and black and white and sound certain, but they may be wrong. See, friends, we shouldn't treat change of our ideas as a bad thing, but as something that deepens our faith, deepens our relationships with one another, and that we have a choice whether to stick with what we know, to drop it all and leave and go home, or to grow, to grow. And I've seen that in my own life. See, friends, the places of the questions, the places of greatest resistance, the places of discomfort provide the best soil for us to grow as people, for us to grow in our relationship with God and our relationship with others. That when you're certain, but find that you happen to be a little bit wrong, choose the path of growth. Because I promise you, The result on the other side is always a deeper relationship and a deeper understanding than ever before. When you're certain but wrong, choose to grow. Instead of being like Eliphaz, who thought that he had all the answers and was just going to lay them out right before Job, who was certain but wrong, instead of taking the path of humility, choosing to grow tells a different story. Let's pray.